You're listening to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the DFS Karma Podcast Network. Now here's your host with the most, Jack Caparuccio.
And welcome back to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the Karma Media Network. I'm your host, Jack Caparuccio, a.k.a. Clinic Cap on Twitter. This is episode number 2 of the No Cap Podcast. Today we're going to have a redraft mailbag, some Dynasty Strategy 101, my best ball value QB2s, and some of my favorite NFL player props for this season. Let's get right into it. So for the redraft mailbag, as always, I had a ton of great questions in the thread on Twitter, but there are a couple I wanted to make sure I highlighted this week. This mailbag is a little bit longer than last week because I know that a lot of you have your home league drafts coming soon at the end of August, and I have mine this coming weekend actually as well. This first question comes from LZREAL09311456, and that is a mouthful to pronounce on this. Let me tell you, maybe shorten your at next time. His question is, howdy. I'm hoping that you would not mind me asking for your opinion. I never mind, for one. I always want questions, so I'm always happy to help. Continuing the question, he says, I'm in a three-keeper, two-flex, full PPR league, and last season, right after Kittle got hurt, I traded for him. I have Devontae Adams, and I'm thinking of keeping both Kittle and Kelsey. I also have Jonathan Taylor. My thoughts on keeping Kittle and Kelsey are that with the position scarcity, it could work out great. With having two flexes, I'm still flexible, plugging Kittle into one of them weekly. What do you think of this strategy? So I followed up on Twitter with this person and asked to make sure that you could put a tight end in the flex, because with most leagues, that's not the case. That's usually reserved for a super flex. And he clarified that you can have a tight end in the flex. And I'm on record for, you know, the first episode of saying that I think your tight end positional advantage is huge. That's how you win championships. And that's how a lot of people have won championships in the last few years. All the people who've had Kelsey on their team for the last 5 years as he finishes the tight end one overall for fantasy. So if you can have two of those top three fantasy tight ends on your team and in your lineup at the same time, I mean, no one's going to be able to match that. The only other possible chance if somebody can match it is if they had maybe, let's say, Darren Waller and Kyle Pitts, if Kyle Pitts hits his ceiling this season, which, you know, I'm more skeptical on than others. But other than that, no one in your league is going to be able to line up against you and beat that out. They might be able to put a running back in their lineup 1 week, and then if they have a big blow-up league, like a 20-point, 25-point week, then they could probably match a Kittle or Kelsey, but most of the time, that's not going to happen. So I'm a huge fan of this strategy. Obviously, it's a unique one since there's keepers in play here, but if you can have two of those top three on the field at the same time, go for it. Next question comes from our man, at Kuzmano_Sal. I hope I said that right. He asked, in single QB redraft, is it even worth it to draft Mahomes or Allen early, or is it best just to wait forever to draft a QB, which would be known as a late-round QB approach? If you wait forever, which ones are you interested in as QBs? So I've been a late round QB guy ever since I've played fantasy, and, you know, credit to JJ Zacharyson on that one because he's obviously the one who pioneered that movement, that philosophy. And I'm younger, so I have played basically since that philosophy has been around. My first year playing was 2012. So I've always been a guy to wait on taking a quarterback. And even those elite options like a Mahomes and Josh Allen, you know, they're within the first 4 or 5 rounds. And it's not that I'm opposed to taking them there if you're a get-your-guy type of person, which I'm not knocking. But the thing is what you can get at other positions at that spot. The drop-off at running back after rounds 3 and 4 is pretty steep. And I think the same goes with wide receivers. There's obviously some great mid-round wide receivers every single year, but there's definitely tier breaks. And, you know, you could put the tight end argument back in the equation as well, because somebody like Kittle and Waller might still be there in the 3rd, 4th round, depending on what your league is like. So I always like to wait just because you can get a better advantage at other positions. And even the elite quarterbacks, they don't always produce consistent QB1 weeks. A lot of the times they fall out of those top 12 or top 10 quarterbacks for fantasy. And you can find replacement value on your waiver wire. So I'm not a huge draft a QB guy early, and I never have been. But in terms of waiting, when I do wait and take that quarterback, which I do, some of my targets this year are Ryan Tannehill. And I like him a lot because the defense in Tennessee is bad, and I mean bad, bad. I couldn't name a corner on that team for you because they cut most of them this offseason. Obviously, I have Derrick Henry, But adding Julio Jones shouldn't go unnoticed. I think that that team, which has traditionally been more run-heavy and hyper-efficient, is going to be a little more pass-heavy this year because they're going to have to be to keep up with teams. So I like Tannehill as a round 10 and after guy. I also still like Tom Brady, who's going later than I think he should. He's my only quarterback that isn't a rushing quarterback that's in my top five rankings this season. And then I also love Jalen Hurts. And that is because he's a Konami code. He doesn't have to be a great passer to be a great fantasy quarterback. And that rushing upside makes him much easier to crack the top 10 on most weeks than a lot of other guys. So those are my three main targets I find myself drafting. And for best ball, I have a lot of exposure to them. This next question is from @Shuey_FF. Who are you taking in the second round of these guys available? Joe Mixon, Najee Harris, or Antonio Gibson? So I'm going to assume it's a full PPR, half PPR, because there is pass-catching element with each of these guys. Personally, I think that Gibson has the highest upside of these three, but he could also have the most dangerous floor. And the reason why I say that is because Gibson did have a high touchdown total last year, high touchdown efficiency, and that's not a sticky stat. That's not highly repeatable from year to year. And if the Washington football team decides to throw more or decides to keep J.D. McKissic in the passing game like they incessantly did last year, you know, that obviously caps Gibson's ceiling. So I would probably, out of these guys, if you're going for the safer pick, I would go with Najee Harris. I know that might be contradictory or seem like a hot take by some, but I think Najee's one of those few guys in the league you can look at him and say, yep, he's going to have 300 touches. And you can't say that with Gibson, because Gibson could get phased out of the passing game with McKissic. You know, Gibson obviously has a skill set to do it, but we have to see the team use him that way first. I love him as a pass catcher. We saw it when he was in college. He was a wide receiver. He wasn't even a running back. So I'll say that if Gibson gets that full workhorse role, if he gets that, then he has the highest ceiling. But I'm not sure if that ceiling's realized right away. And in the second round, I want to lock in that volume. And Joe Mixon, I do like him this year. He's in my top 10. But he also has injury concerns that I feel like you have to bake in, because it's happened almost every season. So he could still get a good workload. But I think Najee Harris has the highest workload of those three, so that's the one I'm taking. This next question is from another very long username, @G1SYWOA2SSSGGGG. Try saying that four times fast. Their question is, yo, I have Galladay as a flex right now, and I don't trust him at all. Who should I target to trade for him? So I actually liked Kenny Galladay when he went to the Giants, because I thought that it was probably the best chance for him to have real volume, because there aren't any other alpha wide receivers there for him to compete with. But now with him already getting hurt in training camp with another hamstring injury, which is an injury he's dealt with in the past, he's a fade for me. With questions at quarterback and with bad offensive line play, we don't know if Daniel Jones can even deliver to him. I like Daniel Jones more than most because he has rushing upside that is never talked about, but I'm not sure if he can deliver a bona fide wide receiver one season for Kenny Galladay, and I don't think Galladay can hold up for that long. He obviously got a big Brinks truck of cash thrown at him, but that doesn't make him not injury prone. So for me, I'm trying to fade Galladay, and if you already have him on your team for redraft, I would try to trade him away for somebody on a team that sees that potential in him still. So in general, a target, I think maybe that could work. I don't know your league, so I can't speak specifically to it. But in general, I'd be looking at some guys that are maybe discounted narrative-wise, like a T. Higgins. Okay, so T. Higgins, a lot of people think, oh, well, Ja'Marr Chase is just going to take over that workload. Higgins is going to be less relevant. And I don't think that's the case. I still think Higgins will have a similar workload in the passing game than he did last season. And we also have to remember that Ja'Marr Chase is still a rookie. He's going to take time to get acclimated. The guy hasn't played football in nearly 2 years because he sat out the season. So I would try to get a Higgins, maybe an Amari Cooper if somebody's discounted on him because he's injured. And I think Amari Cooper will be just fine. Honestly, he has these nicks and cuts every single year and still plays and is still a productive fantasy asset. I would try an Amari Cooper, a T. Higgins, heck, maybe even a volume guy like a Tyler Boyd at this point. I'm not crazy sold on Galladay. And I think he's going to be a really frustrating guy for you to roster this season. This next question comes from @LloydRage. He says, redraft QB, 2 RB, 3 wide receiver, tight end flex, PPR strategy. It feels like the least discussed draft strategy. So I'm going to start getting into more draft strategies on future episodes. I know that's something that a lot of people are wanting to talk about. But in general, for this format, obviously, with the three wide receivers and a flex and only two running backs you have to play, you need to prioritize the wide receiver position and early. I'm usually not take a wide receiver in the first round kind of guy. Traditionally, I haven't done that. But in this format, if you can stack, say you're at the 10th pick and you have the 11th in the second round, and you can stack something like a Tyreek Hill and Stephon Diggs maybe, depending on how your draft falls, I would do that. I would take a wide receiver my first three picks, unless some crazy value falls at running back or tight end. But I would be making sure I had those elite options, because that's what's going to win you weeks in this league. You can roll out four wide receivers, and if you can get four wide receiver ones on your team or high-end wide receiver twos to at the back end of that, then you're probably going to win more weeks than not. Obviously, since it's a single QB, you can wait a long time, and you're going to have to wait a long time on a QB if you're going to fill out these roster spots with quality players that you need to actually win weeks. So that would be my strategy going into it, is take wide receivers often and early. This last question comes from at General Vizzy. He says, Cap Daddy, at the 110, do you take the positional advantage with Kelce, or do you go running back to start the draft in a league where all the good running backs are gone by mid-round four at the latest? So something important here is that he realizes that his league might be different than somebody else's league, and says, you know, I know because I've been in this league for a while that all these running backs are going to be gone. That's really important to know when you're going into draft day, is to know what the rest of your league mates do. But as I've touched on in the past, I want the positional advantage at the tight end. I think this is a reoccurring theme that's going to come up the next couple weeks, and I'm going to have the same answer, because you can't beat it, because the drop-off from the top three of that position and the rest of the field is so drastic that you'll never be able to make up for it outside of some fluke weeks, or if you identify a breakout like Darren Waller on the waiver wire or George Kittle back when he broke out, and those are rare. Those don't happen every season, and they have to be an athletic tight end to even have a shot at that. So at the 110, if Kelce was there, I would take him, but I really don't think he's going to be there. I think Kelce has become more of a top five pick than a lot of people realize, and obviously, again, that does depend on your league and what your league values at tight end, but I don't think he'll be there. You know, even at the 110, I'd be comfortable taking Waller if you don't think he's going to come back around you on the pass at the second round. So I'm taking that positional advantage every single time. For this week's Dynasty Dish, I want to go over some Dynasty Strategy 101. So I know not all of my listeners are Dynasty Fantasy players. Whether you are or not, I wanted you to give a quick overview of Dynasty Strategy 101, because it does differ from your traditional redraft leagues, and it can help you in your redraft leagues. If you have a Dynasty mindset and you play in one, it will actually help you in redraft. And here's why. When you're in redraft leagues, traditionally we've been taught, ignore the rookies. The rookies have no value. They're not going to produce for fantasy year one. They're going to get overdrafted. They don't matter for me. But with Dynasty, you're always looking at youth and you're looking at rookies, and you can identify those rookies that are going to break out and going to be good for fantasy year one. So I think learning that will transfer over to your redraft leagues and make you a better redraft player. So this is why I talk about Dynasty on the podcast, because it informs the other and vice versa. There are some strategies and philosophies you can take from redraft and port to Dynasty. I believe the best fantasy players out there know both, and they know both very well, and it makes them better in both. So some general rules are 101, if this is the class of Dynasty, if you want to call it for now. When you're in a startup, prioritize young, elite wide receivers over running backs in drafts. So a startup draft, for those who've never done it, is where it can be 25, 30 rounds. When your league starts in Dynasty, you have to take more than you would in a redraft league because you have deeper benches, you need more players, etc. And when you're in those startups, a lot of people have a hard time identifying, like, okay, what is this guy worth? Because I'm looking at him over the next 2 to 3 years rather than just this singular year. You know, we're taught that take the elite running backs early and often, but I think with Dynasty, it's flip-flopped. And because the shelf life is longer and is less replaceable, and it's a less replaceable position for teams if they have an elite wide receiver, look at the turnover at the running back position in 2-3 years. Guys that are elite now, we're not even going to be talking about in 2 to 3 years. They'll be irrelevant for fantasy. And look, you know, the extreme case is Todd Gurley. A couple years ago, best running back in football, had a big contract that justified it. Now, he's unsigned. So if you had him in Dynasty and took him with a first-round pick the year before he fell off, you got burnt. You never got value out of that unless you got somebody stupid in your league to trade with you who didn't know about his knee issues or anything like that. So I always side with taking the young wide receivers early because they get the higher dollars, they usually get longer term contracts than running backs, and it's harder to find production from them in the NFL draft. Running backs in the NFL draft are replaceable with second and third round picks, and teams will often do so every 2, 3, 4 years. They can turn that position over and over and over again and still get the same production for the most part out of, you know, good talent. And a lot of it is because the game has changed and become more pass heavy, so there's more emphasis on those receivers. And when an NFL team finds an elite wide receiver, they prioritize them. They hand them a huge contract. Look how much money Michael Thomas got off of a hugely elite year, and look where they're at now. That's a severe case, and so was the case with A.J. Green when he fell off. So, you know, there obviously are some that get injured, they have a steep drop-off, and it depends on what their game is based on. But in general, they're less replaceable and have less turnover than running backs. So when you're at those high points in your startup draft, always go with elite wide receivers like a Justin Jefferson or even a Tyreek Hill or CeeDee Lamb, and prioritize them high so that you can just nail that position down for about 4 or 5-ish years and have less turnover on your roster. Another general rule I like to follow is draft for talent and trade for need. And what I mean by this is when you're in a draft, whether it's your startup or your rookie draft, and you see somebody on the board. For example, let's say you're in your rookie draft and you see Trevor Lawrence on the board. Maybe that's a bad example. You see Kyle Pitts on the board, and then you see Amon-Ra St. Brown at the same spot, and you look at it and go, well, I don't have a starting wide receiver, or I don't have great wide receivers, but I do have Travis Kelce as my tight end. So I don't need Kyle Pitts, but I need a wide receiver. That's where you need to check yourself and say, okay, which one is more talented? Kyle Pitts is a lot more talented at his position than Amon-Ra St. Brown, and I like St. Brown a lot, and especially because I'm a Lions fan. But Kyle Pitts is obviously the more talented player, even though you already have talent at that position. You take the talent, and then you can trade down the road to fill in that roster spot where you just need 10, 15 points a week or something like that. Whereas a tight end and a highly talented one is much harder to find. And you get down the road, let's say if Kyle Pitts hits at the ceiling we think it is, in 2, 3 years, you're not going to be able to trade for him. You will not be able to get Kyle Pitts on your roster. And vice versa, if you wanted to trade away Kyle Pitts, you could have somebody sell you their farm, basically. Give me the next 4 years of your picks and players. They would do it because it's that big of an advantage. So always draft for talent, trade for need. It's much easier to fill out your roster that way, and you can stay competitive like that. And my last tip for the day is in Superflex, you don't always need to reach for the QBs in your draft. Superflex, for those who don't know, is when you can put a quarterback, running back, tight end, or wide receiver in the flex spot. And for the most part, you always do a quarterback because they have the highest floor of the week and a lot of times the highest ceiling. So essentially your roster becomes a 2-quarterback league. And there's a tendency in drafts to the first 2, 3 rounds, people hoard quarterbacks because they're scarce and hard to find. I'm not saying completely pass on quarterbacks in your drafts in Superflex, but reconsider it a little bit. Fill out that QB1 spot, but for the QB2 or Superflex, you don't always need the elite talent. If you can get a guy with replacement value, like a Baker Mayfield or Kirk Cousins later on, you're going to be fine. But what happens is when everyone takes those quarterbacks early, other guys drop. Your running backs drop, your wide receivers drop, your tight ends drop, and you have huge value sitting there. I got Ezekiel Elliott in the 4th round of a dynasty startup because it was super flex, because everyone hoarded QBs. Obviously, Zeke probably only has 2-ish years left of elite production, but it gave me a massive advantage over the rest of the field by doing that, and I still have replacement value at my quarterback position because I took one later, like a Zach Wilson, who's a rookie. So I know a lot of people like to reach high for the quarterbacks, and that's like a rule of thumb for super flex, but I would say just give pause and reconsider that a little bit for how your board falls, because you could get some screaming values out of that. If you have more in-depth questions about anything Dynasty, feel free to reach out to me directly on Twitter at ClinicCap, or join the free chat room we have by visiting dfskarma.com. You can join us on Discord. So for my best ball and underdog fantasy, I wanted to cover some QB2 values. And what I mean is that second quarterback that you're going to take in your draft after you secure probably an elite option earlier in the rounds. So if you don't know what best ball is, best ball sets your lineup for you every week based on your highest point scores, so you never have to manually set your lineup again, which maximizes your winning potential on the season because you can have a ton of rosters without having to look at them. If you don't have an underdog fantasy account yet, use promo code KARMA to be eligible for our exclusive bonuses. you get 5 free entries to the Puppy 3 tournament, which is 5 free chances to win $250,000. So make sure you sign up before it's too late and before drafts close. One of the keys to winning serious money on Underdog Fantasy is by identifying the ADP values at each position to get a leg up on your competition. I'm highlighting my top 3 ADP values for the QB2 slot on your Underdog Fantasy roster. These are guys that I think are well below what their ADP should be, and they're probably going to outperform it from a production standpoint. The first guy on my list is Kirk Cousins of the Minnesota Vikings. He's being drafted as a QB19 in terms of his ADP. I think he's being drafted far too low for somebody who finished as a QB11 overall in 2020. Granted, it was his best statistical season, but he still has the same weapons around him. I think you're drafting Cousins at his absolute floor and not his ceiling. He's got Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, a red zone tight end, Irv Smith Jr., and one of the best running backs in football in Dalvin Cook. I think that Cousins will outperform his ADP by a significant margin, and he is the perfect QB2 to pair with a high-end QB1 on your roster. My next guy is Ben Roethlisberger, who's currently going as the QB25. I get it. He's old. I understand. He had elbow surgery. I get all of that. He's not a sexy quarterback pick at this point in his career, but sexy picks don't always win you championships and money. Roethlisberger finished as a QB14 overall for fantasy, and that was with him sitting out the Week 17 game against Cleveland, so that was a whole game of production he didn't have. He's a borderline fantasy QB1 being drafted as a QB3. He's not exciting, but at the worst, he's a QB2 for fantasy and is surrounded by offensive weapons like Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Najee Harris. I'm taking Roethlisberger as ADP all day long because I know he's going to outperform that barring injury. If he and his weapons stay healthy, he's going to outperform that. And he'll have some spike weeks for you where you could have high touchdowns. He's never going to be, you know, plug him into your lineup and he's 30 points a week. That's not him at this point in his career. But with the weapons around him, he's got a lot higher upside than people think he does. My last option is Jared Goff of the Detroit Lions, drafted as the QB30, which indicates by drafters that he's one of the worst QBs in football. And I get it. The Lions are supposed to be really bad. But drafting Goff as being almost the worst fantasy QB in the league is an overcorrection to that narrative of how bad the Lions offense will be. In 2020, Goff finished as a QB18 overall for fantasy. While that isn't anything to get excited about, it's a great value for a guy going almost undrafted. If you believe that the Lions defense is going to be bad, which it probably will be, then you should like Goff even more. Him being forced in these negative game scripts is going to increase his passing attempts from what we've seen. Remember, he's coming from a Rams team that had a great championship caliber defense. They could get out to a lead of 20 points or, you know, get 20 points and they could kind of coast and, you know, put Goff on cruise control. The Lions spent money and draft capital to fortify their offensive line as well. So I think Goff will have more time in the pocket than he's had in recent years. And I think that Lions offensive line will be much improved. And while his receiving core is suspect at best, the sheer passing volume should allow for Goff to significantly outperform that ADP. So I'm stashing him as a QB2 because I genuinely think he's going to have some spike weeks just because that team is going to have to throw to stay in games. And that's what you're chasing in fantasy football is volume. And to round out the show, we've got my NFL Player Props of the Year segment back again. This week's player props are season-long receptions over-under. To find all of our other staff's favorite bets, make sure to sign up for our premium package on betkarma.com. All prop lines are based on DraftKings Sportsbook. Lines may vary based on the time that you are listening to this or if you're using a different sportsbook. So my first line is Calvin Ridley regular season receptions over 98.5 is at -115 odds. With Julio Jones in Tennessee, Calvin Ridley has a direct path to being a bona fide wide receiver one in a historically pass-heavy Atlanta Falcons team. In games that Julio Jones has missed with injury last season, Ridley actually performed better statistically. This is not a Juju Smith-Schuster situation where his wide receiver one leaves and then his upside is capped and he's not as good. Ridley is good. He is a wide receiver one. He's arguably a top 10 wide receiver in this league, and he's going to show that this year. He can handle the load of being that main option in the offense, and I expect him to smash the over on this line. Last season, in only 15 games, Ridley had 90 receptions, and that's with Julio in town. Baking in 2 extra games and an increase in target share with Julio being gone, and Ridley should easily go over this 98.5 reception mark. So bet 1 unit on Calvin Ridley over 98.5 receptions at -115 odds to win 1.15 units. My next one is Brandon Ayuk, regular season receptions over 67.5 at -115 odds. In just 12 games last season as a rookie, Ayuk racked up 60 receptions. While some of that was without George Kittle and Debo Samuel in the lineup consistently, Ayuk should still easily surpass the line of 67.5 receptions in a full 17-game season. As a rookie, Ayuk had less than stellar QB play. Whether it was veteran Jimmy G as a starter or if it's rookie Trey Lance this year, I think he'll see significant improvement in his quality of play at the quarterback position. I'm taking the over on this line all day because I think he's the best wide receiver in this offense. Bet one unit on Ayuk over 67.5 receptions at -115 to win 1.15 units. My last line is Marquise Hollywood, if you want to call him still, Brown, regular season receptions under 60.5. Remember, under. In a full 16 games played last season, the second-year wide receiver Marquise Brown only had 58 receptions. That's abysmal. He did this while being the only viable option in the pass game outside of Ravens tight end Mark Andrews, and with the additions of Sammy Watkins, Rashad Bateman, barring his health, Tylan Wallace, and a reported uptick in J.K. Dobbins' passing game, I just don't see how Brown hits the over on this line, or even pushes. Combine these factors with the fact that Brown's already dealing with a hamstring injury in training camp, and that the Baltimore Ravens still project to be one of the most run-heavy offenses in the NFL, and this feels like an easy under for the season. Bet one unit on Marquise Brown under 60.5 receptions at -115 odds to win 1.15 units. That's it for today's show. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe anywhere podcasts can be found and leave a quick review if you'd be so kind. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the No Cap Podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review anywhere podcasts can be found.